WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is Texas-bred songwriter, performer, and record producer T-Bone Burnett. Music critic Joe Sasfi described Burnett's songs as grappling with his own life and by extension with that of his generation in his country. Although Burnett is a favorite among many rock critics, he's never broken through to a mass audience. But he's produced records for performers who have, such as Elvis Costello, Los Lobos, and Roy Orbison. Burnett has left most of his own records in the hands of other producers, but he decided to co-produce his new one himself. From his new album, The Talking Animals, here's the song Relentless. On your new record, what did the producer in you want to show off about the performer in you? As a producer, what did you want to show off of your performing style?
Ooh, well, I think primarily I wanted the songs to come across. That's my main concern as a producer, is to get a performance of the song that does it justice.
Why don't you always produce your own records?
Well, it's difficult. The studio is such a narcissistic place that one can tend to want to make himself seem perfect, you know. I feel like you need an objective person there just to say stop, you know.
Let's talk about your work as a songwriter. Are there certain songs that formed your idea of what makes a really good song? Certain songs that you measure everything against?
Yeah, I think You Are My Sunshine probably is, I think, is the greatest song ever written, you know, as a popular song. I think the great songs are things like You Are My Sunshine, where every word is gigantic in it, or All You Need Is Love, You Are My Sunshine, you know. Those words, those terribly democratic songs that each person can understand and feel.
On one of your earlier records, you recorded Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, the Julie Stein mm-hmm. song.
Uh-huh.
What made you want to record that song? It seemed, I have to say, kind of out of keeping in a way.
Well, you know, I was thinking there was a time in this country when Julie Stein was writing, or Rodgers and Hart, or Cole Porter, when there were popular songs that were literate and funny and smart. And hits as well, and I thought that was really peculiar. You don't see a lot of those sorts of songs today, but that particular song, I thought, this is a really beautiful song, and it still is, and funny, witty, and it still is pertinent today as it ever was. But you tend never to be able to hear it because of the melody is so sort of jaunty or happy or something, you know. So I decided to slow it down and take it out of that thing completely and make a more modern arrangement for it or something.
Yeah, well, you almost totally flattened out the melody.
Yeah, I think I did, in fact.
Kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. Kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the automat. Men grow cold, girls grow old, we all lose our charm in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Let's rock.
Did a lot of people think you were trying to trash the song when you recorded it?
I don't think so. You know, Anita Loos, who wrote the book for that show, she heard it and loved it. About a month before she died.
That's great.
I love that song, and I think most people thought it was a fairly loving rendition of it.
How did you start producing records? Because you were producing records back when you were a teenager.
Yeah, I was You know, we started, we had a local band, and to get better jobs or to get jobs at all that paid, we decided to go in and make a record. You know, because you could do that. You could make a record back then for $100 and get it pressed and get it played on the radio. And I really, I fell in love with the process at the time, because it was, you know, that was the beginning of multi-tracking and all, you know, all the possibilities.
Do you think the role of a producer has changed a lot since you started out when you were a teenager?
It's not a lot. It hadn't changed a lot for me. There are producers these days that have machines. There's a guy, Trevor Horn, who's made some really good records, all with his Fairlight or Synclavier or whatever it is he has, that just comes, you hire him, and he basically fabricates a record for you. So there's always been that, and then there's always been the kind of guy like, I don't know, like Alan Lomax, who's just gone down to the field and recorded people, you know. I feel a lot closer to that kind of producer.
You produced the Roy Orbison recording of In Dreams that was used in the movie Blue Velvet. What were you going after in the re-recording of In Dreams?
We were trying to make it as true to the spirit, sort of the spooky spirit of the original record as we could.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, and just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say a silent prayer, like dreamers do. Then I fall asleep to dream my dreams of you.
Well, you're producing a new album with him now. I guess it's already produced and the album's going to come out soon. It seems to me that there's a couple of traps you could easily fall into with a comeback type of record. One trap would be to go for nostalgia, and another trap would be to be trendy in the hopes of sounding contemporary. And now, what were you going for in the new record?
Well, my original idea was not to change anything Orbison ever did, but to simply make it sound as big today as we thought it did back when we first heard those early records.
Do you feel that music has ever let you down, that rock and roll has let you down? I know you think of yourself as playing more of pop than rock and roll. With the way rock and roll has become wedded to show business in a way, do you feel like you've been let down?
Well, I think, constantly. Almost invariably you get let down by it. Because a lot of us had a lot of hopes for rock and roll when we were kids. You know, coming from a very repressed, kind of strange, hypocritical society, we were hoping that there was going to be something different, and there really isn't.
Is there any spirit of rock and roll that you would like to keep in the records that you make of your own and the records you produce of other people?
Yeah, I would like to keep the abandon, the audaciousness of rock and roll. That's the thing that I think is important. I mean, I remember Elvis Presley. I was reading the liner notes to his greatest hits or something that have just been re-released that Greg Geller did. Or no, who did those? I can't remember. Maybe Peter Guralnick, a good writer. And one of the things Elvis said was he was when he was growing up down in Tupelo, he used to listen to a black blues singer down there, and he said he knew that if he could sing with the same emotion and spirit of that guy, that he'd be a music man like the world had never seen. And I think that's what he just finally decided, what have I got to lose? And he cut loose, and you saw what happened, you heard what happened. And I think that's the really wonderful thing about rock and roll, is that sense of abandon.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
T-Bone Burnett's new album, The Talking Animals, on Columbia Records is due out February 8th. Here's the song, Killer Moon.
The talking animals say,
You're listening to Fresh Air.